Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah.
This is Adam Kent alongside our miniature dachshund Lou. We're from Folsom, California, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and thank you to Adam Kint and lovely little dachshund Lou for your intro to the show there. Greetings to you over in California. The good news, folks, is that it is no longer January 2021. The bad news is that it is February. And that is a disappointing fact of the Gregorian calendar. But to any of you that completed dry January, you have my utmost respect and admiration and bafflement.
I salute you.
I never lied to myself, David. I did not even attempt.
Me neither.
I'm all about self-care at the moment. My best friend did, though, and she loves a wine. So many, many congratulations.
What's her name?
Kay.
Well done, Kay.
Well done, Kay.
You're not listening, but still, well done.
She listens, actually, despite not really being a tennis fan.
Hey.
That's love, isn't it?
Yeah. She just likes to listen to Matt, I think.
Matt, how dry or otherwise was your January?
I mean, actually, pretty dry in all senses.
He's nothing if not consistent. Anyway, it is it's wet February.
Yeah, and actually February's satisfying this month, isn't it? Because it's four perfect weeks. It's four Monday to Sundays.
Yes.
It fits very neatly on the little phone calendar.
That is very true.
That's... It also features the Australian Open, so
yeah,
I'm up for it.
Catherine's birthday.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Great month ahead because tennis has returned. And boy, has it.
Oh, dear. I mean,
Matt, there were 60 matches that took place overnight UK time. So on during the day on Monday in Australia. And I thought, well, that's too much to get my head around. I'll just sort of filter some out for a couple of days until things calm down. And there are slightly fewer matches on the schedule. But then Matt informed me that there are how many taking place overnight tonight?
82. Due to the addition of the ATP Cup to the schedule.
How many is there going to be the next night?
And that's not even with all the tournaments underway yet. Because the Hard Quarantine Cup, which is actually the Grampians Open, Grampians Trophy...
Yeah, I think we'll go with Hard Quarantine Cup.
Hard Quarantine
I like that.
Cup, yeah. Which is a WTA event. That doesn't start until Wednesday.
No offence to Grampians, which sounds like a lovely place, but, you know.
No, and apparently the names of all of these tournaments, they're named in honour of places that were badly hit by the bushfires of last year, which is a lovely gesture, and
yeah,
I really support
it.
I just can't quite get my head around it. We really are trying. I think I've nailed the names themselves. We've got the Yarra Valley, we've got the Great Ocean Road, we've got Gippsland, very much on top of Gippsland, loving Gippsland, future holiday destination for Catherine Whittaker. What I am not remotely on top of is who is playing in which tournament, especially as it's all on the same order of play. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, they're at the same... I hadn't quite processed that that would be the case pre-tournament because they're all being played at the same venues. So, yes, it's in the small print of the order of play, which tournament they belong to, but my goodness me, it's a lot to process.
Yes, you just get an order of play for Melbourne Park rather than for the actual tournament. And that order of play within it contains five or six different tournaments. It's quite the organisational feat if they can pull this off, but it isn't half confusing. And I mean, I watched the whole match this morning. I honestly couldn't tell you what tournament it was, but I did enjoy the actual tennis. That's sort of my approach to it. I'm accepting the fact that I can't get to grips with all of the details of it and just enjoying, just sort of picking a match, watching it and enjoying it for what it is.
And maybe it's not that relevant at this stage. I mean, obviously, once it gets to quarters, semis, final, it will become relevant what tournament they're in and who they end up playing. But at the moment, when it's just kind of on the lookout for what's the level of tennis like, do these players look like the players that we know them to be? Maybe what draw they're in is kind of neither here nor there. What do you think, David?
Yeah, well, I think the draw that I'm most interested in is the one that takes place in a couple of days' time in the Hard Quarantine Cup, whatever it is, where every player has been in 14 days of quarantine without any access to practice courts or anything else, partly because I'm curious to see whether they look troubled physically by that or not, and partly because it's just a really good draw. It's a smaller draw, I think, and it's just full of big names. Bianca Andreescu, Angelique Kerber, lots and lots of players that I'm really interested to see over the course of that week. But there are six tournaments going on at the same time in the same venue this week, one of which is the ATP Cup, which such a song and dance was made about a year ago, and yet it feels... I mean, look, I'm glad it's going on because it's another source of entertainment and an opportunity for these players and for us to watch. But it's so strange as a feeling to just cram all this stuff into a single week, into a single venue. But this is one of the best indicators of it being a new world of the lot, I would say. The fact that we just all accepted there's no alternative. This is all they can do, and this is what I was certainly campaigning for a month or so ago. Just make it work somehow. And I actually think the way they've rustled up this Hard Quarantine Cup for these players was a real stroke of ingenuity. I love that they did that. And yeah, it's a mess looking at this order of play and this life. And I don't know what's going on half the time. I feel like you have got to choose a match. You've got to choose something you're interested in watching. But it is also lovely to see this many players suddenly playing tennis again. And there's only a few absences. And there's some players that we haven't seen in such a long time. And it's great. I mean, can't wait to see Bianca Andreescu play again. I mean, it's about 15 months, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And we will come on to talk about her. Just a few bits of housekeeping for you first, because we do we have a mascot for the week.
Hey.
And it is Lucky Chester the rescue cat, because he's going to get three pods for his mascot money, because that's how many pods we're recording this week, because, of course, we'll have an Australian Open preview. And we will also have an Australian Open draw show on Thursday. And my brother has actually put an alarm in his phone for the Australian Open draw because he is that excited about the mere possibility of Djokovic and Kyrgios being drawn to face one another, remote as it might be.
We're not very good at odds, but I mean, those are quite long odds. But...
Yeah, you never know, do you? I mean, I would accept them being in the same sort of section of the draw. So you don't want to be banking on Kyrgios having to make the fourth round or quarters. But if they could be drawn in to face one another in the first three rounds,
what are you saying?
Results
you weren't,
dependent. I would accept that.
You weren't encouraged by his pre-tournament press conference in which he said, "I haven't really thought about tennis at all, and I haven't missed it." And
I don't know who my opponent is, and I just hit some serves.
But that's just classic, isn't it? He's just pretending that he doesn't care. I mean, don't get me wrong, I suspect he has played a lot of Call of Duty in the past year. And if it were the Call of Duty Open, he would probably be the champion. What was the game he was playing on the Rod Laver Arena? No,
Fortnite.
Fortnite. Maybe if it was the Fortnite Open, he would win. God, I sound old. Let's move on. Anyway, hello to Chester.
Is that
lovely
Pac-Man?
Our lovely rescue cat. Both my childhood cats were rescues. And one was quite dysfunctional. But in fact, they were both quite dysfunctional in very different ways, but immensely lovable.
And Chester looks lovely.
Chester looks lovely. And I had a teddy bear when I was a kid called Chester. He was my favourite teddy. Aww. Yeah. So hello to Chester. Hello to Rogue, to Scalzo Mousel, and to Zeus. And I know we usually do this at the end, but we're going to do it at the beginning because we're about 10 minutes in, aren't we? But we keep neglecting to mention, because I can't quite believe that it's real and true, but Billie Jean King is also the mascot for Billie Jean K9. And those aren't words I thought I'd be saying.
Ever.
at any point in my life. But yeah, I'm going to say them at every possible opportunity. So, tennis, into the nitty gritty. I should say, by the way, that we all have tennis on as we're recording, which are some of my favourite pods when we're able to sort of casually have tennis on in the background. And I have missed that. We've all got the sort of early 2010s throwback match of Marin Cilic against Jeremy Shardy. Shardy serving for it. It's gripping. Try not to be too distracted, folks.
Marin Cilic looks a bit stressed out, but
he does. Yeah,
that might be sleep deprivation.
He looks like he's become a father in the past.
Yeah, I definitely recognise that look in his eye.
So that is on before us. That match is. Oh God, I'm taking a punt here. That match is from the Murray River Open.
I admire your determination.
I'm giving it a real
go
here, folks.
To go
somebody
for it. I haven't the foggiest
no idea. It's either that or the Great Ocean Road Open, because those are the two men's ones. I know that. That is all I know.
Okay.
I would probably have got the gender wrong. So, you know, well done.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those.
By the way, he's love 30. There you go.
Yeah. This match is taking place on the 1573 Arena, which of all the arenas to change their name, I would have nominated that one because I don't understand it. I don't understand it being called the 1573 Arena. But no, it is in fact the Melbourne Arena, which has had lots of names in the past. It's been Hisense, it's been Vodafone, then it became Melbourne, and it is now the John Cain Arena, which is named in honour of a former Premier of Victoria that died in December of 2019. He was Premier of Victoria up until 1982 to 1990. So we are really, really going to try to not call it. I mean, I'm still calling it the Hisense Arena. So
they're getting a bit more bang for their buck. Hey,
I really am going to try with that one. The Rod Laver, oh God, I can't even get that one right. The Rod Laver Arena is, oh my, it's because the puppy is chewing my fingers to the bone. God, over there.
Billie Jean, you're sponsored by the actual Billie Jean King.
Yeah, I know,
it can't behave like this.
It's an embarrassment. It's right, she's found Mr. Squirrel. That is a constant source of entertainment. So the Rod Laver Arena is currently out of action. It will be brought into use from the start of the ATP Cup. So that is tonight, UK time. So the main court until now has been the second biggest court at Melbourne Park, the Margaret Court Arena. And obviously, I'm sure all of you are aware of the constant debates there has been over the past few years over the naming of that arena, because Margaret Court is consistently publicly making comments that many people, in my mind, all right-thinking people, and certainly we, find intolerable. And she uses the platform that she has in order to make those comments and spread what she believes is the right message. We understand the position that Tennis Australia are in with regard to the naming of that arena. It's a very delicate tightrope for them to walk, and they are very clear that the naming of that arena honours her achievements as a tennis player and has nothing to do with any views that she might have expressed. And some people might endorse that and think that you can separate the achievements and honour those with a naming and it not have anything to do with whatever other views they might have. But over the course of the past few months, the past year really, and due to Tennis Relived in large part, we've sort of been on a bit of a journey, haven't we, with coming to understand the significance of the names of things, you know, in particular with the Arthur Ashe Stadium and that Arthur Ashe podcast we did ahead of the US Open, but also the significance of the unveiling of that Althea Gibson statue. And what a great shame it is that there isn't more named after Althea Gibson, and the fact that it's no coincidence that far too few people are aware of her and what she achieved, particularly relative to, say, Arthur Ashe, who does have this significant, huge stadium named after him. So we have decided that just amongst ourselves on this podcast, we are going to call the second stadium at Melbourne Park the Yvonne Goolagong Arena.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's right.
And I think it's that it became heightened to me when we covered Yvonne Goolagong in our Tennis Relived show of last week. And it was just such a pleasure to find out more about her, to watch her, to understand what she's meant to people, the positive messages that she has sent around the world, and the good she has done for the Indigenous community in Australia. And I've felt ashamed that I knew so little about her and what she'd achieved. And I think the response that we've had tells us that many people, certainly in the UK and around the world, and there are many, many fans of hers as well who did know all about her, but I feel like a lot of people had some blanks filled in last week that listened to that show. And over the course of the last week, I was thinking back to that protest last year by Martina Navratilova and John McEnroe, which was very well-meaning in sort of hijacking that arena and holding aloft a self-made sign that said Yvonne Goolagong Arena. Beautiful sign, actually. But using the Australian Open facilities to do so, and they subsequently apologised for doing that because they'd signed up not to to do those sort of things with their accreditation and so forth. So, you know, we want to do this in a very respectful manner, understanding Tennis Australia's position, but yeah, just in our own way making clear how we feel about it, and therefore we're gonna name it ourselves or refer to it as the Yvonne Goolagong Arena because we feel that that's what it should be called.
And it's not to disrespect Margaret Court's achievements on the tennis court, it's just to say that we believe that there is a lot more significance to the naming of something than just honouring pure tennis achievements. And you need only to look to the Arthur Ashe Stadium for evidence of that. So that's what we're going to do. I say that's what we're going to do. Obviously, I will forget because I can't even not call it the Hisense Arena. So that's what we're going to try to do.
Good intentions are half the battle, Catherine.
Yeah, yeah. So what have we seen so far in terms of tennis? Well, Victoria Kuzmova lost before I'd even registered that tennis was happening again. I honestly hadn't realised it had started. I hadn't quite got straight in my mind what time it was all kicking off and the time difference with the UK and therefore what time I should tune in. And by the time I tuned in, Victoria Kuzmova, bless her, was already out of the tournament.
And she was my first pole vault of the year.
Do you know, if memory serves, and I could be slightly out here, I think she was the first player to lose at the Australian Open last year.
She was, Matt.
Mm.
I remember watching that screen eagerly. It was a, you know, she was in a race.
She was in a race with someone else,
with another,
wasn't she?
And bless her, she won that race.
How do you remember this stuff?
Well, because I'm tormented by it. I'm tagged in Twitter posts every time she loses.
That's one of my favourite things.
Yeah. Oh, it's very funny. I've sort of got myself in a bit of a predicament here because I absolutely want to be taking some credit if she ever does do anything of note at all. And yet I'm also quite eager to distance myself and admit that I made a mistake, but I realised that would be having it both ways. So, yeah, I'm kind of stuck with what to do about Kuzmova.
Well, you don't need to think about her for the rest of the week because she's old news. She must be wondering why on earth she bothered with the trip. But anyway, hopes are high for the Australian Open. She doesn't need no warm-up tournament.
She was beaten by Daria Gavrilova.
Yes,
who,
she was.
Featured
who
in
set
your,
up
your first big match of the tournament watching experience, didn't she?
Yeah, she set up a meeting with Serena Williams. That match was played at what time this morning, Matt?
Well, I had my alarm for about 5:30 and Serena was on shortly after that went off. So I watched all of that match and Serena was really good, a really strong overall performance. I think she won it 6-1, 6-4. She was especially good in that first set, very clean, really good movement, no sign of the Achilles injury, which she had at the end of last season, which she said in her press conference afterwards, that the fact that the tournament was moved back 3 weeks later was the reason she was able to play it. She needed those weeks for her recovery.
Yeah, she said that the Australian Open being pushed back was, quote, an unwanted blessing. It was much needed for me, she says, because of that Achilles injury. Mm. She says she didn't quite say she was 100% fit, but she just said it's a lot better now.
Mm. I think something to look out for with Serena, I was looking back at her results from the end of last season. The last three matches she lost, she all lost from a setup to Shelby Rogers in Lexington, to Sakkari at the Western Southern Open, and then it was Azarenka, wasn't it, at the US Open. And then she obviously pulled out of her second round match at the French Open, so that wasn't technically a loss. But I think what we've noticed with Serena over the last few years is how long can she sustain her best tennis? And I think that is perhaps becoming one of her problems. She's coming out of the blocks brilliantly, but she's not quite able to sustain it, and opponents are reeling her in a little bit. And that it didn't happen today against Gavrilova. She maintained a level that was too good for Gavrilova, but there was a difference between that first set and that second set. And I do just wonder whether a better opponent might have pushed Serena even more in that second set and made that difficult. I really do think that is something to watch with Serena, whether she's going to be pushed and whether she can sustain her best level over the course of a whole match.
And she could perhaps do with being pushed in this week's tournament so that she's not pushed for the first time in the Australian Open. I wish I could tell you who was in her draw that might push her, but I'm just scanning through the two draws that she might be in to try and identify which one she is in. So David, say your piece.
fill in some time. There was a moment, first of all, when, because I switched on, I didn't wake up as early as Matt, but I switched on halfway through the match, and there was a moment, a little bit of a tighter moment, where she hit a winner and she let rip a Danielle Collins type roar, which really woke me up, I tell you. But you know, I got the sense that she was quite in a good place mentally. At least she looked
very composed,
really up for it. I noticed she's playing Svetlana Peronkova next, which is somebody
in the Yarra Valley. Open Cup?
Yes, something like that.
Classic, I think.
Classic.
Oh, okay.
No, Yarra... Is it Yarra Valley?
Yeah.
Yarra River.
Yarra River? No, I think it's Yarra Valley.
Yes, correct. That's what it says anyway.
Because I talked about the wine, didn't I? And the wine comes from the Yarra Valley. It's throwing me off my game when I'm getting it right, Matt.
And actually, if she won that one, it'd be the Pliskova or Danielle Collins after that, Caroline Pliskova. So, you know, there's a lot of opposition to go through. And actually, I think the high quality of these events, because there's so many events, the draws aren't that big. And you get high quality in each one of them. So I think there are going to be some good tests. I do feel that this is the first year that we've gone into where I don't think she's going to win a Grand Slam title, personally. You know, I've been always thinking she's... how many times have I predicted her as the champion? Probably do the world a good not to be by me. But, you know, it's it just feels different now. That it feels like that when you reeled off the other day, Matt, that list of players that have won slams since 2017 when we were reliving that, there just feels so much depth there, so many players that could beat Serena that I think that this is now probably going to be too much for her.
Crucially, so many players whose best might now be better than Serena's best.
I kind of feel like, as you said, Matt, it's about how long it lasts, that best. Because remember that first set she played against Azarenka the other month?
Yeah, it was an astonishing level.
Awesome.
Yeah, true, yeah.
But she got reeled in.
I watched, I obviously didn't wake up at 5:30, ludicrous concept. but I did watch that match this morning in bed with the puppy. And I was very, very impressed by Serena. I did think she looked really good. But then, of course, she's Serena. Yeah,
she is really good.
She's really, really good. So I don't know how much to look into it. I also think Venus Williams looked really good yesterday. She beat Arantxa Rus 6-1-6-3. I should say that I would expect those players that were in Adelaide to look significantly better than anybody else thus far. But then it's difficult. You need to adjust that for the fact that they were in Adelaide because they are the best players. So it's going to be very difficult to discern how much is down to them just being great and how much is down to them having significantly kinder quarantine conditions. But Venus Williams, I thought, did look really good. And she now faces Petra Kvitova. Yes, please.
Venus against Petra Kvitova.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's good. Tomorrow night, I think.
That is also in the Yarra Valley Classic.
Right.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, tennis podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Can I just give you a little Chilich Shardy update? Because it, you know how Shardy was serving for the match and he was at love 30. And, well, Chilich broke him, went 6-3 up in the tiebreak. He's had 5 match points. It's now 8-all in the tiebreak. Chilich on his 5th match point double faulted into the net. And he almost couldn't hit the serve because he threw it back behind him so far. And he almost fell over.
Oh, Marin.
Gosh. So
8-all in
the
third.
He's had a year to work on those service yips.
It looks so stressful out there. And now Shardy's just hit a clean winner. So he saved 5 match points and now Shardy's got match point. So there you are.
Shardy, wow. On his own serve, he's won it. My dad will be delighted to be hearing this because he sent me a message earlier saying, I'm watching the pods whipping boy Shardy versus Chilich. He thinks he's had a rough ride on the tennis podcast.
We like Jeremy Shardy. He's
we
a lovely
do.
Bloke.
He's my neighbour. I'm a big
is
fan.
He?
Yeah, he lives in, I mean, relative. He lives in Parsons Green, doesn't he? He's a Londoner.
Right, I see. Okay.
So well done, Shardy. You've won through to the second round of a tournament.
Which one was it?
Good for you. It's either the Murray River or the
Great Ocean Road.
Great Ocean Road.
Right, okay, of course it is. Yeah. I mean, lovely concept, as you say, but don't expect me to keep on top of it.
Simona Halep also won there very easily. She beat Anastasia Potapova. Svitolina won. Coco Gauff won in 3 over Jill Teichman.
Yeah, it was a final set tiebreak.
Yeah, did we? It was in the middle of the night, so obviously I was fast asleep. But did we? Did anybody watch that? I watched a lot of Jill Teichman in Lexington last year, and she can really play. Mm. She's had most of her results on clay, but she really can play, and she's got a fair bit of variety. So I'm not necessarily that surprised that she's troubled Coco Gauff.
Yeah, I think Gauff was having a little bit of trouble with her serve again, certainly in the sort of key pressure moments, but somehow managed to find a way through that tiebreak. And she now plays Katie Bolter, who I did watch some of.
Yes, me too.
And I thought she was excellent. I think she did some of her off-season training in Alicante, and she just seems very ready for this season. Obviously, she's been blighted by that back injury she had. I was also reading an interview she did with Donald McRae in The Guardian, in which she talked very openly about her chronic fatigue syndrome, which I knew was a thing, but I didn't quite realize how long she'd had that and how it affects the way she trains. She said she reached her highest ever ranking doing 1 practice session a day and no gym work. And she was kind of talking about how the conditions in quarantine, therefore, weren't actually too bad for her because they put a limit on the amount of work she could do. So I thought that was really interesting. And if she's in a good place physically, I'm very excited to see what she can do this year because it feels like she should be a top 75 player kind of consistently with her weapons. And she really hit Kalinskaya off the court today. Such a huge forehand. I remember watching her beat Makarova at the Australian Open a couple of years ago when that forehand was such a weapon. So I think Gauff versus Bolter should be very interesting overnight.
She'll forever be the answer to a quiz question, Katie Bolter, won't she?
About the 10-point tiebreak.
Won the first ever Grand Slam 10-point tiebreak.
Yeah, and she thought she'd won it when she got to 7.
I thought she looked really sharp. For her, it's all about, was it 2 years ago? Gosh, I've erased last year. she looked really sharp. I know movement can be her bete noire, and she can look like a different player if she's got an opponent that really is able to expose that and get her on the move. But when the ball's in the strike zone, she's such a pleasing player to watch.
Well, if you remember back 2 years ago, aside from that win over Makarova, the way she performed at the Fed Cup in February and April of that year, and she looked okay. Not every opponent was the best opponent, but there were some good ones, and she looked a real player and a heck of a fighter. I loved the way she scrapped, but I mean, it was a stress fracture of the back pretty much, I think, and she just couldn't play. Is her body going to be durable enough? That's a big question mark. But I hope we find out. I hope for her sake, I hope she gets a proper run at it to see how good she can be.
Mm. And I think she was just coming back, wasn't she, when COVID hit? She was just sort of starting to play again. And I think maybe she'd even had a win in Indian Wells qualifying, something like that. And then obviously the season shut down. So hopefully she can finally build a bit of momentum.
Fran Jones played through the night. I watched the early stages of that match. She lost out to Nadia Podoroska of French Open semi-final fame. It's going to be interesting to see Podoroska, what she's able to do to back up that run. One really notable thing that lots of people have been commenting on about what we've seen so far is the sparse crowds. Obviously, we saw the... What was the Adelaide exhibition called?
A Day at the Drive.
And the drive referred to...
The Adelaide Memorial Drive Tennis Centre.
Right, yes. So a Day at the Drive exhibition, that was obviously tennis's big return post-quarantine. That was a one-day exhibition on Friday featuring the players that had been quarantining in Adelaide, so top players in the world. And it was a smaller venue, smaller stadium, a new one, in fact, than in Melbourne. But it was packed and the atmosphere was glorious. And it felt like this celebratory festival of tennis is back and it feels like normal. And it pressed all of my FOMO buttons. And I thought I was so conflicted watching it. It was glorious, but it was making me ache. And I thought, God, you've got to expose yourself to this because this is what it's going to be like for the next 3 weeks. It's going to set you on fire and also make you ache all at the same time. And then come to Melbourne and the 75 tournaments that are happening there, and they're pretty empty, really quite empty, to the extent that I was looking up whether there were even crowds allowed in.
Yeah, I wondered whether that was the issue as well.
Very confusing. And crowds are allowed in. In fact, you mentioned it on Twitter, Dave, and you had a reply from the commentator Alison Mitchell, who has been over in Australia for a long time. She does a lot of work on the cricket for Channel 7 out there, does some tennis work as well. Used to do a lot of work for the BBC, Alison Mitchell. She's great. She replied to you saying, number one, Australian Open is on the radar. These tournaments less so. Number two, work and schools are back, whereas the AO is usually a key part of the summer holidays. And point number three, there is apprehension of many Melburnians about crowds, even with reduced capacity. She said, then again, Yarra bars were buzzing on Sunday night, so reckon come AO, it will change. Smiley face. But yeah, it's interesting.
And a few people also replied from the area. I mean, some people had gone, but a lot of people did say that they are apprehensive, that they... And that's something that I'm looking out for. One of the things with the Adelaide site was seeing this full crowd, and I don't believe anybody had masks on. At least I wasn't aware of anybody having a mask on. And I know it took some people watching from the States, particularly by surprise. I think Patrick McEnroe remarked on it on Twitter about, wow, you know, full crowd, no masks. What's going on? And of course, I think they're up to, in certainly in Melbourne now, they're up to what, 25 days of successive lack of any positive transmissions and tests. But are people expected to wear them or not? I'm not 100% sure. And it's an alarming sight to see without, even though it makes total sense in terms of if the virus just isn't around, then you've got nothing to worry about, I suppose, is the argument. The alternative argument is that, well, isn't it a better message to send out globally that you wear them? That's an argument. But I know that watching it, we're so used to it now, it just makes you feel a little bit anxious because we're so used to having to keep our distance and wear masks.
Mm. I'm a bit torn about it because I think sort of scientifically, medically, I don't I can totally see that there isn't, I mean, mask wearing isn't really a thing, I don't think, in Australia, because they've just taken this completely different hardline approach to it. Lockdown early, lockdown completely, close borders and eliminate the virus. You know, that is their approach rather than kind of manage it and limit spread. So, you know, with zero cases, there is very little call for masks. But equally, I think optics really, really matter with this. You know, you've got players, I noticed the players walking out onto the court wearing masks. And my first thought was, well, we all know that you haven't worn masks in the locker room and you're just going to take them off as soon as you start the match. So what's the point? And then I sort of corrected myself and I thought, actually, no, the fact that I'm noticing it is important and that messaging is important. And there's very little cost to it for the players to make that show of mask wearing. So why not? But then I suppose you could argue for a crowd all day in sweltering heat, there is quite a cost to mask wearing. I certainly wouldn't want to. It would put me off going to watch tennis if I knew I had to sit there all day wearing a mask in 40 degrees, developing significant mask acne.
The struggle
is real.
I was surprised, though, to see so few people there when Alison said that, when it was confirmed that you can go. I just sort of thought Melbourne would be all over it, really.
It's pretty jarring. It's going to be interesting to see how that develops, I think. I mean, and particularly for the ATP Cup as well.
Yeah. I think there probably will be an increase tomorrow with Australia playing in the ATP Cup, Nadal and Djokovic on the schedule. I think that will be a real sort of litmus test, I suppose, in terms of how many people are showing up. And as soon as it starts, I should think it will take off from there in terms of the crowd size.
The ATP Cup, which is still called the ATP Cup, that kicks off tonight. The draws are, there are four groups of three. You've got Serbia, Germany, Canada in Group A, and Spain, Greece, Australia in Group B, Austria, Italy, France, Group C, and Russia, Argentina, Japan, Group D. Pam Shriver made the point on Twitter, just drew attention to the fact that there's no American team in the ATP Cup. And rightly so, there's no American man in the world's top 20. And it's nothing new, particularly the state of American men's tennis, but it is pretty jarring. So, I mean, that's a whole debate in itself, but just an interesting one to draw attention to. So kicking things off tonight, we've got Canada against Serbia, Djokovic against Shapovalov, the pick of the matches there. It's a great day one. Every one of the matches, particularly the doubles, every one of the ties features at least one player that I've never heard of, which is my favourite thing about the ATP Cup. The Serbia-Canada tie has Nikola Kacic playing doubles alongside Filip Krajinovic. So good luck to you, Nikola. That follows on from Djokovic-Shapovalov, which I'm very much here for. And then the night session tie is Spain against Australia. Roberto Bautista Agut and John Millman. And then it's Rafael Nadal against Alex de Minaur. Yes, please. And then actually a doubles match featuring four players that I have heard of.
It's quite an interesting line that I read about how few of the Australians have won matches in the first couple of days, despite having not had any quarantine at all. And, you know, that's, again, it's just such a fascinating few weeks ahead to see whether conditions they've been in make any difference to how they get on.
And Bernard Tomic, bless him, had to withdraw with a knee injury.
Managed to put a muscle in quarantine or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm quite interested whether the ATP Cup is good preparation for the Australian Open or not. I remember we had this debate last year in terms of its intensity, and David, you made a very interesting case that was it too intense to start the season,
and then Djokovic won and then he won the Australian Open.
Yeah, but I think there was quite a lot to that. I mean, de Menor, for example.
We were all in on that case for a while, David.
Yeah, yeah, and Alex de Menor, for example, got injured and couldn't play the Australian Open. But I think this year specifically, there's no gap between the two events. And for the top players to win the ATP Cup, it's four matches against fellow players in the top 10. There's no sort of opportunity to really pace yourself, which I think is what quite a lot of players like at the start of the season. So it does offer a slightly different dynamic to the one last year. And I think generally with this tournament, when's the best round to go out? You know, do you want to be playing right to the end? I mean, I know in the Western Southern Open, the Osaka-Azarenka final there ended up being the US Open final as well, so it didn't really make much difference. But I remember Raonic had a brilliant Western Southern Open, went out quite early in the US Open. Same with Bautista Agut. I think this week is quite a lot about pacing yourself and getting the matches you need. I just wonder whether the ATP Cup is pretty demanding.
Do you think that they will put the handbrake on at all?
Or maybe they will. I should think they probably will.
Yeah.
I mean, last year they didn't, but no. I should think they will this year. Yes.
Djokovic has got that horrible blister, of course, on his hand. So, I mean,
which he says is fine now.
It looked horrible.
It did look bad, yeah. It meant he didn't play the exhibition.
Djokovic is a lot better at putting the handbrake on than Nadal is.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know if Nadal has a handbrake.
No.
I think in the ATP Cup last year, Nadal didn't play the final doubles, which was a bit of an indication that he was treating it as a kind of Australian Open warm-up. Obviously, there were points and everything, and he wanted to win, but he didn't go all in. I suppose the players might do a little bit more of that this year.
Yeah, that is interesting. Russia against Argentina features a doubles match with the pairing of Evgeny Donskoy and Aslan Karatsev. Very keen to know whether Aslan Karatsev is in fact named after the lion in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. So if anybody can tell me that, I would like to know, because it's a great name.
Why are you looking at me? I haven't got the foggiest. I've not seen that.
So that is the ATP Cup, which kicks off tonight. Tonight being Monday night UK time. Throwing ahead to Tuesday night UK time, which is Wednesday morning, afternoon, Australia time. That is when the Hard Quarantine Cup, also known as the Grampians Trophy, kicks off. And that is where you'll find Bianca Andreescu. And if I had to pick only one tennis player to watch this week, it would be Bianca Andreescu. I'm so on the edge of my seat to see her play. And I was gutted that she was one of the 72 subjected to the hard quarantine. Although she didn't seem that gutted. And if she was, she certainly kept that pretty close to her chest. I get the impression, particularly on the basis of an interview she gave to Tamani Carriol in The Guardian that over the weekend, that what she's been through in the past year, injury-wise, has given her such a sense of perspective on tennis, and has very much helped her get through not just quarantine, but the difficulties of being a tennis player in the past few months. She describes that last year, sometimes I would just sit in my bed and cry, she said. To Tamani. Incidentally, in an interview in which it was disclosed in the intro that she had to interrupt the interview for a COVID test, which is, that's very now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Not came to her door. But I find that really interesting. I mean, I guess it's no great surprise. I mean, awful what happened to her injury-wise pretty much immediately after winning that US Open. Yes, she went to China. She played that amazing match with Naomi Osaka, which just further whetted our appetites about her potential, and then had to withdraw from Shenzhen, or retire from her match and withdraw from the tournament in Shenzhen, and that was curtains on her until now. And yeah, of course it would have been incredibly tough, but I guess, you know, you don't hear from someone for a year. All you see is their Instagram, and it looks like, oh, she's doing all right, you know. But you don't put the rubbish stuff on Instagram, do you? No one puts a post of themselves sitting in their bed and crying.
Not very often. And she's, I know, I do find her an example of somebody that if you just have a think about what that's like. I mean, yes, she's got a great life. She's won the US Open. She's got no money worries, all that sort of thing. But the one thing that she wants to be doing and that she wants to do for her career, she just hasn't been allowed to do. Her body hasn't let her do it. And then the pandemic hasn't let her do it. And obviously everybody's in the same boat to some degree there. But that is a massive amount of time of your career given her. I mean, she's played less than she has played since the start of her career. And when she has played, she's just been a joy and a factor every single time. And it's, she's kind of the great unknown now, because we don't really know what she'll come back out like. I hope it's like riding a bike and that she just picks up and starts playing like she did when she won the US Open. Because if you throw that in with Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka looking like a different player now, and Iga Swiatek and Ash Barty and Simona Halep, who we've got this line about her having been in the top 10 for the last 8 years. I mean, there's so much good stuff there. And she, I agree with you, she's the one that I will find out what time she's playing, and I don't care what else is going on, I'm going to watch that.
You're going to have to wait a little while, because she has a bye in the first round as the top seed.
I mean, come on.
I know.
What do you need that for?
Yeah, and you also, do you need a bye in a draw that small? Do you need byes?
I think,
I don't know.
There just weren't enough players
to
fill the draw.
But in the second round, she will face either her countrywoman, Leila Fernandez, of course, the really promising youngster that's making that transition from juniors to seniors, or fellow US Open champion Sloane Stephens.
I mean, come on, that's a draw and a half. Mm.
That's a good one, isn't it? Also in that draw, sorry, Matt, go ahead.
I was going to say, then there's potential aggro alert in the round after, because it's Angelique
Ooh.
Kerber of biggest drama queen ever.
Splendid.
Yes, Kerber, no bye for her. She has Katerina Siniaková in the opening round, and then would face either Ondřejová or Anna Blinková. And then it would maybe be Andreescu awaiting. Azarenka has a bye. She could play Putintseva in the second round. Jennifer Brady faces Svetlana Kuznetsova. Now, I think Jennifer Brady is entered in doubles.
Yeah, she's one of the ones who's in singles at the Hard Quarantine Cup and doubles somewhere else playing with Barty.
Yes, because we know they're going to play doubles together at the Australian Open.
Yeah.
So apparently you can enter both draws in separate tournaments. It's the news that I needed. Maria Sakkari is in this draw. She also gets a bye in the opening round. Heather Watson is there. And Belinda Bencic, the second seed at the bottom of the draw, she also gets a bye. She would face either Castella or Alison Risk. So that's the Grampians Trophy. Have any other trophies popped up since I've been talking that we need to discuss?
Amazingly, no.
Do we have any other business? Do we have anything else we want to talk about? Do we have any other ones to watch? Or
conditions are quick.
Ooh.
Are they?
A la 2017.
Well, I should say this is a second-hand assessment of the conditions. It was an interview I was reading with John Millman. He was saying that he wasn't allowed to practice at Melbourne Park last week because that's where all the players who had travelled internationally were practicing. So the Australians were being kept apart from them. But he was a bit frustrated that he wasn't able to practice because he was hearing, everything he was hearing was that the conditions were a bit different this year, a bit quicker. Apparently the balls are not fluffing up, they're really flying, and the actual surface is a slightly different composition to the one they had last year, a bit less sandy, a bit less grippy. we spoke in our 2017 show about how much we loved that those quick conditions that year. So hopefully if they are a bit faster this year, we will enjoy those as well. But conditions, I always take assessment of conditions with a pinch of salt. You speak to two different players and they have completely different opinions on what it is. So we'll see, I suppose. But personally, I'm hoping that they are a bit quicker. Mm.
Who will be hoping that they're not? Who will be disappointed by that?
Djokovic.
Mm.
Djokovic likes it quick, doesn't he?
But there are more other players. There are more opponents of his that like it quick.
Actually, this stage in his career, he probably does prefer it a bit quicker than he used to.
I mean, you know, I just think...
I think he'll be fine with
it,
whatever.
He's won Wimbledon so many times. And
sure,
all the rest of it,
but Wimbledon's slower than it used to be.
Mm. Mind you, 2017, if it was quick, he didn't do so well that year. I mean, I know there are other factors. Yeah, very interesting. Who will it favour? I'm trying to think of somebody who may really have a benefit if it ends up quick. I mean, there's not that many players
Serena?
These days. Yeah, I think she could. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Good
Definitely
point.
Definitely Serena. Right then. Well, we're coming back with another one of these on Thursday and another over the weekend, and then they're coming at you daily from next week. So when there'll just be one tournament happening, and I'll be in my happy place. But it's great to be talking about tennis again, isn't it?
Lovely.
Yeah, we have missed it. And yeah, I think that's it.
Not that the absence has stopped us or anything.
No. It's great to be talking about tennis that's happening before our very eyes now, live in the world, is happening. A reminder of our mascots. David, yours is Rogue.
Rogue, who I've seen a couple of cracking pictures of recently.
Yeah, Rogue is very photogenic.
Rogue was listening to our podcast, had the app up on the phone next to...
Yes, the Pete Sampras pod.
Yeah.
Mm. My parents weren't having it about Pete Sampras, by the way.
Yeah, no, I'm not talking to them at the moment.
So we listened to the pod. We really enjoyed it. Great work. Still, opinions unchanged about Pete Sampras.
They were unmoved.
Unmoved, yeah. Something to do with him always having his mouth open and wearing very baggy shorts. Anyway, Matt, your mascot is Scousel Mousel.
Yes.
And mine is Zeus. And Billie Jean's, who she's now curled up good as gold on my feet, just basking in the fact that she is sponsored by actual Billie Jean King, the human, which is extraordinary. Our pet mascot for the week on the podcast is Chester.
Right, Chester.
Lovely Chester. And our executive producer is Chris Albert Lee. So thank you very much to top bloke Chris Albert Lee.
What about shout-outs?
Oh, shout-outs. Who are they, Matt?
They are Julie Westfall.
Hey, ooh. Julie. Thanks,
hello, Julie. Is there like a Julie Eastfall that's your great rival?
Sounds like a sort of magical place, doesn't it?
Westfall. Doesn't it? Yeah.
Mm. Hello, on a holiday there.
Hello, Julie. Thank you.
Glenn Norman.
Oh, like Magnus.
Nearly like the golfer.
Or Greg.
Yes.
Yeah. Cheers, Glenn. Thanks ever so much.
G. Norman, you've got to be good at golf.
I wonder how many times he gets that.
Yeah,
I
mean,
yeah, no, I know. Sorry. What a cliche we are. And Declan Byrne.
Oh, hello, Declan.
I reckon I'd quite like to be called Declan.
I can imagine
that.
You as a Declan.
Yeah, it's a good name.
Declan Rice.
Yeah.
We got any others?
He's on the up, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I think he's going to go to the Euros, which definitely won't happen. But in principle,
do you want to swap Declan? Declan Law.
Declan Byrne.
For the tennis podcast.
Yeah. Okay, then. Thank you to all three of you for your support. It's much appreciated. And as I say, we'll be back with an Australian Open draw dissection come Thursday. We'll speak to you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.